You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Now that the trade deadline has passed, teams are going to be focusing on how they want to see 2016 end for them. I'm Allison Footer, and we are going to be hearing from our NL and AL West reporters about where their teams are headed. Let's take a listen.
You guys just talked to Lance McCullers, who left as we're taping this yesterday's game with a sore elbow. So what more do you know on that?
Yeah, the latest is he has a sprained elbow, mild sprain of the elbow. He's not even going to throw for 2 weeks. So it looks like he's going to be out through the end of the month. So that's obviously a big blow to the Astros rotation. He's been pitching really well. They're hopeful that, you know, it's nothing that needs surgery, that hasn't been discussed or anything. But obviously anytime someone has an elbow sprain, no matter if it's mild or whatever, that it's cause for concern. And I'm sure they'll come along very slowly with Lance. We know last year they limited his innings a lot, and then he came in the spring on a different program than everybody else because of the innings, and ended up having some shoulder discomfort and started the year on the DL. So now another injury going on the DL. So tough blow for the Astros and Lance.
That was, I guess everybody probably held their collective breath with that. And it kind of, I mean, there's a lot of like young guys and young talent on this team, but figuring out where everyone's going to come in. I guess right now Doug Fister is also out. His wife is having a baby. So they're making all these like random roster moves. But what does the rotation look like to you now?
Well, really, McCullers is out and Joe Musgrove is in. Musgrove is going to pitch Sunday against the Rangers, and you know that's going to be a big game for the Astros. So Fister will make his next start. You know, paternity leave's only 3 days. But, yeah, they were the healthiest team in baseball. In fact, I wrote, I think 2 weeks ago, they had only lost 122 games to the disabled list, which was half of the next closest. That's how few they had. And now, you know, Marwin's been banged up, and they had Gomez banged up, and now, you know, pitcher going down. So, you know, it's been pretty tough.
So Brad Peacock came up. So where is he just going to slide into the bullpen there?
Yeah, he's going to be the long relief guy. Davinsky pitched so many pitches a couple of days ago, I guess on Monday, that they didn't feel he would be able to go Wednesday. And, of course, Musgrove now is out of the bullpen pitcher. So they felt with Feldman gone, they didn't have the long relief guy. So Peacock's up to be that long relief guy. Whether he's the guy that goes back down when Fister's activated on, I guess, Thursday or Friday, remains to be seen. But, yeah, he'll be in the bullpen.
So speaking of Joe Musgrove, so we've been hearing a lot about him in the minor leagues, obviously like a top prospect from a pitching standpoint. They've been very high on him. He came in, he made quite an impression. So was it like 7 strikeouts and he just looked like he was dealing? Let's also, you know, not to be like Debbie Downer, but this does happen a lot when a young guy comes in. There's no video on him, very few scouting reports. But that had been like really encouraging just seeing what he did.
Well, the thing is, it kind of jived with what we saw in the minor leagues. Guy who throws strikes with great control. And, you know, the first batter in Encarnacion, he's at 3-1. And you're like, this guy that doesn't walk people, he can't come in and walk the first guy. And then he comes back and he strikes him out. So, yeah, he's a great story. You know, has 4 pitches and he's in the strike zone. He's a competitor. And he said that he got a couple of text messages after the game, one from Jamie Moyer and one from Trevor Hoffman. You know, he's a San Diego guy, and so Hoffman managed him in the Futures game. And he said Moyer was a friend of his godfather, I think, and Moyer ended up coming to his backyard a few times, and he picked his brain about the mental side of the game because, you know, Moyer was competing at 82, 83 miles an hour, and he said there was nobody better to tell me about that kind of stuff than Moyer. So they reached out to him after the game Tuesday, told him congrats. But, yeah, great story. And I think he's going to get a real shot here to stick in this rotation.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best way to do it, right? Just to throw them in there and see what they can do. And they've seen that. I mean, over time, you know, Roy Oswalt stuck out to me because they did have him in the bullpen, like, for a game or two, and then they put him in the rotation, and the rest was history. So you never really know until you give somebody a chance. Okay, let's talk about Alex Bregman. And we like him. We like his swing. We think he's going to be a very, very good major league player. This is not what anybody thought to start off with. So this is a little problematic because now we're getting into a pretty high number of at-bats and he's only got 1 hit. At what point, there's a fine line because you have to figure out, like, okay, we don't want to bury the guy because then it starts becoming a confidence issue. But if you keep throwing him out there and not getting results, then that can also be an issue too. So what do you think they should do?
Well, they're giving him the day off Wednesday, and AJ said, yeah, it was definitely a blow. Just step back a little bit. He said, you know, when do you give the guy the day off? Because, you know, a couple of 0-for-4s pile up, and maybe that day is the day he gets a hit. So it's tough, but Bregman's a confident guy. He's a young guy who's succeeded at every level, and it doesn't seem like this is hurt his confidence a lot. He's doing a little things differently. He's chasing hits a little bit, lunging a little bit, which, you know, you don't want. But I still think he'll be okay. And, you know, at the end of the year, he'll be able to look back on this and laugh a little bit. But, yeah, one for 32, I think it is pretty startling. But he's too talented. His swing is too good for this to go on. And anybody who goes one for 32, there's got to be some bad luck in there as well. So all those things factored in, I think he'll be okay. He'll have a 2-for-4 game at some point, be off and running. We'll see.
No, I mean, there have been a lot of strikeouts, right? He's been making good contact. I mean, his outs have been pretty good.
Yeah, he's hit some balls hard. In fact, I think he at one point had 3 balls hit over 95 miles an hour, and or 5 balls hit over 95 miles an hour, and was 0-for-5. And the major league average on balls hit that hard is over 500. So that gives you the idea that he's hitting some balls right at people.
Okay, so the trade deadline was, it was a very interesting day here. Very interesting to cover because they were clearly, they didn't make any moves. They traded Scott Feldman. So they actually traded a veteran guy. They didn't need him. They needed the roster spot. So that is not, any kind of white flag at all. But not a great day around here. I mean, let's face it. They did not do anything to improve the team, and the Rangers did a ton to improve their team. So where do you think that they stand now? I mean, they're going to have to go with the, what did they say? Go with the one who, dance with the one who brung you?
Yeah, dance with the one you brung you. Yeah, I mean, they tried to spin it the best they could. Hey, we've had the best record of the majors since May 1st, which is true, but the Rangers have righted the ship a little bit. They went out and added LaCroix and Beltran, 2 huge additions. So, yeah, it kind of hurts if you're the Astros to see that happen and you're not able to do anything. You know, we know they tried really hard, and, you know, they made a deal last year that they sent 4 prospects for Carlos Gomez and Fires that so far the trade hasn't panned out. So maybe you look back on this, and maybe sometimes the best trades are the ones you don't make. But they certainly wanted to add somebody in the pitcher, and they weren't able to do that. So now they're going to have to rely on the guys that are here and the guys coming up, Musgroves and Gurriel, who's now in Lancaster, will be here probably in a couple of weeks. So, and the guys that have been here all year are just going to have to pick it up and keep playing like they've done for most of the last 2 months.
So there are still issues with the starting rotation. Nobody is denying that. But to get Jonathan Lucroy, Carlos Beltran, Jeremy Jeffress, that had to have really shaken the team in the right way. I would imagine that was very well received in the clubhouse.
Oh, yeah. You know, Allison, when July 31st rolls around, everybody's looking at it as Christmas and wondering what's going to be under the tree for them. And the Rangers were obviously hoping for, you know, something to make them better, something to show that the club believed in them, the ownership and the front office believed in them. And it happened in a big way with LaCroix, Beltran, and Jeffress. You know, 3 guys are really going to help this team. You know, they could have used a starting pitcher. They didn't want to pay the heavy price being demanded for them, so they went kind of in another direction and reinforced the lineup. You're looking at a lineup that's probably the best in the American League right now.
Yeah, I was kind of laughing at the whole Lucroy thing because I was watching this thing fall apart in Cleveland, and of course the reports are out that he had been traded there and then had blocked the trade, and then all of a sudden there were the Texas Rangers. Their name was thrown out there in the social media world, and it just was very reminiscent, of course, of a year ago when the Houston Astros had a deal for Cole Hamels, and then he said no thank you, and then the Rangers swept in and got him. So it had to have felt like a little bit of deja vu with that, right? Were you not at all surprised when you heard that the Rangers were, you know, right in that thing after the Indians thing fell apart?
Yeah, I mean, the thing was, right about the time the LaCroix trade was going down with the Indians, you know, some of us, it kind of felt out the Rangers, and I think it was Saturday night, you know, we were getting strong messages from the Rangers that they were not going to be able to do anything big. This trading deadline was going to pass quietly. And then once the LaCroix trade fell through, it became obvious that the Rangers were re-engaging with the Brewers. And, you know, Beltran, his name had come up earlier in the week, but nobody really took it a whole very seriously. We all kind of thought that they were really concerned about Shin Soo Chu and coming off the DL, but once it seemed like that Chu was going to be able to come back and be fine, you know, we felt like, you know, the Beltran thing would die out.
Yeah, no, it seemed to be pretty savvy moves all around. Is there, I heard a couple just lines of conversation that I thought were maybe a little bit exaggerated, but basically the thinking was, well, you know, they didn't get starting pitching, but the rotation is definitely going to maybe even improve just by having Luke Roy behind the plate with a great pitch framer. He's a veteran guy. He calls great games. Can that really make that much of a difference between in pitching?
That supposes the fact that the Rangers' catches were weak in that department, and I don't think that's the case. I think Bobby Wilson and Robinson Chirinos were doing fine defensively behind the plate. I think they were very good defensive catchers. I think the big problem was they weren't, you know, producing big numbers offensively. But, you know, I think that's overrated. I think the Rangers' pitchers will be what they are. I think Lucori may help a little bit, but he's also coming to the American League. He's also coming to a new pitching staff. So, you know, whatever advantages he might have might be offset by those two factors.
Yeah, now, Carlos, I don't want to get too far away from Carlos Beltran. He was going to be a perfect fit for a lot of teams. I know the Astros were also looking into him. He has such a good track record in the postseason. And you can't make too much out of what he did in 2004, because that was obviously 12 years ago. He was 27 years old at the time. He did go off completely, hit like 8 home runs in the postseason. He's obviously an older guy now, a different player, but having that playoff experience and having success in the postseason, I guess that does carry a lot of weight still, even though he's, you know, at a different stage of his career.
Yeah, you know, playoff experience is a big thing, but, you know, the Rangers have that. Beltre has that. Moreland has it. Andrews has that. You know, to get another big bat in the lineup, you know, it's certainly not going to hurt the Rangers. I mean, 1-9, they have offensive threats at every part of the lineup. I mean, I think Elvis Andrews is batting ninth, and, you know, this guy was hitting at one point, he's hitting .290. So, I mean, what Beltre does is he just gives them a very powerful lineup. You know, as good as they had maybe in 2011 when they almost won the World Series. I mean, you know, 1-9, they stack up as well as anybody in the American League, probably better.
So they still have to piece together. They're waiting for a couple of starters to come back, obviously, with Derek Holland and Colby Lewis and others. Not others, those two. But the fact that they didn't add to the rotation, they need to get through August with, like, A.J. Griffin, Lucas Harrell. That could be a little bit problematic. I mean, I know Lucas has done all right. Often that happens when you have a guy that just kind of comes in and hasn't been seen a lot lately. So there have to be still some concerns there with the starting pitching, right? I mean, they're not totally out of the woods on this.
You're absolutely right, Allison. I mean, the best thing is to get through August. You know, Colby Lewis was pitching lights out before he went down with a strained muscle in the back of his right shoulder. You know, he's going to miss 2 months. He'll be back at the end of the month, hopefully. We'll see if he's as effective as he once was. You know, Derek Holland, he'll be back at the end of the month. He's getting ready to go on a rehab assignment. You know, Derek has been hot and cold over the last 3 years. He's had a lot of injuries. He's had moments where he's pitched well, moments where he hasn't pitched well. You know, we'll see. Right now he's feeling great, and he should be ready to go right around August 21st. And A.J. Griffin has pitched pretty decently. The big thing right now, I mean, it's Cole Hamilton and Yu Darvish are holding up this whole team. I mean, they're the two starters. They're the two frontline guys. We all know Hamels has pitched well this year. Darvish is still, you know, feeling his way back from all his injuries. You know, he's got incredible talent, incredible stuff, all that neat stuff. But the endurance isn't there yet. The durability isn't there yet. And he's still yet to really get on that in that good role that you would think a frontline starting pitcher would get on. So, you know, a lot depends on Hamels and Darvish, not only now but in the postseason. I mean, it's great to have two frontline starters to lead your team into postseason. But you saw what happened with Kershaw and Greinke with the Dodgers. I mean, they had two of the best of the best leading them into the postseason, and you know they're still looking for a World Series.
Greg, I was kind of chuckling as I was going through and reading up on everything, because, like, technically at the deadline, they didn't do anything. But they had been pretty active, like, a day earlier. I mean, they did make some moves. So I guess the Wade Miley trade, I think that was the one that sort of stood out. So what was their thinking behind that? They obviously got a pitcher in return who they have some control over, and I guess that's really – was that their goal?
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting one, and it's kind of hard to put a finger on, really. I mean, Miley is a guy that, you know, they did have control of for – for another year, but at a price. And I just think they weren't real happy with what they were getting out of Wade Miley, to be honest, and felt like they wanted to go with a different guy. They brought in Ariel Miranda from the Orioles, who's a 27-year-old Cuban that we haven't seen a lot of. He pitched a couple innings, interestingly, against the Mariners earlier this year. It's his only big league experience. But kind of largely an unknown as far as, you know, those of us who haven't seen AAA pitching from the Orioles. So he's a guy in AAA. He's going to come up. He's going to start on Thursday. He's going to take Miley's spot at least for one turn before Taiwan Walker comes back. So Seattle fans will get a chance to see a little bit of that return on Thursday at Safeco Field. But, that one a little harder to put my finger on, you know, exactly what they're looking for. Sometimes trades are made and you don't understand 100% what the thinking was, and you may never know. But I guess bottom line, they weren't real pleased with what they got out of Miley and felt they were ready to move on there, and went with a young lefty, and Ariel Miranda, who I guess not really that young at 27, which is kind of the interesting part of it.
Yeah, I liked how Jerry DePoto was very realistic with his comments, basically saying that they were realistic about their playoff chances. And regarding August and September, he said a lot of things will have to break right for us. So this is really a time, I guess, for the team to be very cautious, the organization as a whole to be very cautious, and to keep their eye on the future beyond the season. I know it's disappointing because I think they were expecting a little more out of the team this year. Not that they're out of anything, by the way, but it's been a little bit of a roller coaster ride. So I guess they need to just stay focused on next season and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing also with them is they believe in that core group they have of Cano, Cruz, Felix, and Seager, and the tough thing with those guys is, you know, the first three of those that I mentioned are getting up in age, so the window is not forever there, and I feel like probably next year that, you know, if they can pull it off this year, fantastic. Obviously, as Photo says, a lot of things have to go right. But rather than selling a lot of pieces at this point and kind of busting things up, they feel like that window is there, and it'll be, you know, one thing with Jerry, he will make more moves. He will have more ideas. I think we'll see moves in August. I think we didn't see some things at the trade deadline. He just didn't feel like they were going to get the return that they wanted. You know, he said we could have been sellers. We could have sold off, but we didn't feel like we were getting what we wanted back. So, you know, you don't want to make moves that aren't what you want. And so sometimes it's better to not make moves in those situations. So they'll play things in August, see if they can get some guys through the waivers and make some moves after that. And then you got the off season when you can really make a chance to build. They've had this year to kind of see what they've got. Now this group, this new organization has a lot better feel for what they've got going forward. So they do like the nucleus they have, and that's why we didn't see a lot of moves on trade deadline. Is just, they just weren't ready to bust that thing up and start from scratch. They like what they want. They want to keep building on that.
And speaking of some of the core guys, so I do want to update on, like, Taiwan Walker. Is he coming back into the rotation this weekend?
Yeah, it's looking like that. Okay. He threw 4 2/3 in Tacoma. Looked good on Monday. So having thrown Monday, the soonest he could come back would be Saturday. That would be his fifth day. So I expect to see him. They haven't announced their rotation yet coming into the weekend, but I suspect we'll see him sliding back in there this weekend. And that will be big because, as you said, moving Miley, you know, creates an opening. Their rotation, which we've talked about all year, kind of being the key to things. And, you know, that's why DePoto says a lot of things are going to have to go right, because you look at him right now and Felix is back, but he, you know, just hasn't been sharp in his three outings, and he's still kind of working back. Iwakuma, who's been very good all year, but his last outing, three innings, didn't look too good against the Cubs, and had some tightness in his shoulder. So they don't think that's anything big, but you kind of start to raise your eyebrow a little bit on that. And Miley's gone. Taiwan dealing with the foot, and James Paxton, who's been, you know, the guy that wasn't even in the rotation, probably their most consistent starter in the last couple of weeks, was dynamic his last outing in a game they lost at the end, but he was outstanding. So Paxton's been very good. So, you know, you kind of like the pieces, but you kind of wonder sometimes, as you get your depth gets thin and you get some question marks with some of those guys health wise as you start to hit these last 2 months. So, yeah, I got to keep that group together, and Taiwan getting back, obviously a big part of that.
Okay, so it is time for the young players to step up, and we know that. We've known that for a while, but Mike Scioscia is not ready to wave any kind of flag, red, white, blue, but I think he understands where they are right now. So some big trades. Hector Santiago to the Twins, Joe Smith to the Cubs, and I guess they got a lot of talent in return, right? So are they pretty excited about what they received?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of a risk, Allison. And Allison, I hope you're okay that Hector Santiago is not on the Angels anymore. I hope you've had a few days to recover. Now that Hector is with Minnesota, we all know how much you love Hector, and understandably so. First off, I hope you're doing okay with this.
I'm doing okay, but I don't get to talk about him anymore because I don't do the Twins podcast. So now I don't get to gush about him anymore.
Well, you know, we're talking about him now, right? So, you know, nothing is different. We're just, you know, in a different light, baby, we're talking about Hector.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the Angels took a big risk, I think, with the Hector Santiago trade. The Joe Smith trade, that one made a lot of sense. You know, he only had 2 months left in his season. The Angels aren't going to make the playoffs. So you have to trade him. And, you know, they got the best prospect that they could get, which was Jesús Castillo, a low-A starting pitcher. And we'll see what he becomes. But you can't ask for much from a middle reliever who's going into free agency and who, quite frankly, wasn't having his best year. Now, the Hector Santiago trade is very interesting because the big reason why they made that trade was because the Twins were going to include Alex Mayer in that deal. And I don't know if you'll recall Alex Mayer, but Alex Mayer is a former first-round pick. He was a consensus top 50 prospect in the industry not too long ago, but he was moved to the bullpen last year, and this year he has spent it pretty much rehabbing from a shoulder strain. So the Angels are banking on Alex Mayer tapping back into the potential that he had a couple of years ago. And even, you know, Billy Epler said it. He said that, you know, Alex Mayer is a high-ceiling guy, but there's a lot of risks attached to it. And what Billy Epler said was that the position that this organization is in, they have to take risks like this. And what he means by that is, you know, the Angels are a team that, as we've talked about before, Allison, wants to continue to win. They want to win even next year. They don't want to go into any sort of rebuild, but they also have a really bad farm system. So what they need is they need to maybe not do as much of just trying to take safe picks and prospects who are just, you know, have a high floor but not really a high ceiling. They need to hit on some high ceiling guys. So that's what they're banking on with Hector Santiago, is that Alex Mayer can get back to being who he was. I think he's getting close to maybe starting a rehab assignment again, and if all goes well, he'll be with the major league team in September, maybe mid to late September, and he's going to go into next spring competing for a rotation spot. So, and, you know, Angels fans ask me all the time what I thought about the trade. Well, you know, we'll see what the trade is when we see what Alex Mayer can be. Ricky Nolasco is a guy who's basically, you know, he just immediately replaces Hector Santiago. He's got the same amount of service time left before free agency. And the money kind of evens out because the Twins are sending money. This deal was all about Alex Mayer and who he could be. And the Angels don't know. Nobody knows. And, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, you do have to at least appreciate a front office that understands, I guess, where they are. And, I mean, we've seen it happen a lot. When you wait too long to try to rebuild your farm system, and you have to, like, break it completely down and absorb several 100-loss seasons in a row, and that would seem wholly unsatisfactory to, I'm guessing, Artie Moreno. I'm guessing that's probably not even an option for this organization, right? They have to stop the bleeding before it starts gushing, I guess.
Well, yeah. Pretty much. And, you know, Allison, this is what a rebuilding on the fly looks like. And Billy Epler has used that term. It's something the Yankees have done. You've never seen the Yankees go into these long rebuilding windows because the market kind of forces them to continue to compete. That's just what the New York market is. I'm not so sure the Orange County market is like that, is that demanding. But I think Artie Moreno is. He doesn't want a rebuild. I mean, I think a lot of what he does with the Angels is kind of structured after the Yankees. You know, he won't sell his stadium off to a sponsorship. He likes to continue calling it Angel Stadium, just like it's Yankee Stadium. And he does spend money on his payroll, and he doesn't want to rebuild. But, you know, the thing about the Angels situation right now is, and we talked about it even heading into this season, if you don't want to rebuild, then you just got to keep spending money on big-time free agents. And they didn't do that last offseason. They didn't get the left fielder that could have really helped them. Now, they had so many injuries in the starting rotation that Yoenis Cespedes in left field may not have helped them. But if he doesn't want to have a rebuild, then he's got to spend on the free agents, and he's got to be willing to go over the luxury tax threshold. And they haven't really done that yet. So, you know, we'll see what happens in this upcoming free agent class. It's not a great group of free agents. And the Angels do have some money coming off the board, but a lot of that's going to be reabsorbed with arbitration raises. So, you know, there's a lot still left to be determined. I think, Allison, the big thing, and I can't overstate this enough, is whether or not Garrett Richards is ultimately going to have Tommy John surgery. So far, the stem cell therapy has worked, but they're not really going to determine that until November. And if he could pitch next season, then everything looks a little bit differently. If he needs Tommy John surgery, then it's going to be really tough for them to compete. And I'll add one more thing. I threw out a poll question earlier this week, and the poll question was pretty much, if Garrett Richards doesn't need Tommy John surgery, do you think the Angels can compete next year, can contend next year? And the results with more than 500 votes were 50-50. 50-50 split on that question. It's going to be really interesting.
Richard, okay, so they traded Josh Reddick, Rich Hill, and they got in return three right-handed pitchers from the Dodgers. So this is a trade with the Dodgers. So, I mean, this is kind of what we expect from the A's, right? I mean, they're not contenders, and they don't have a great budget, so this is what they have to keep doing, right?
Yeah, they have to keep reinventing the wheel. And one thing they did, they took two guys that they weren't going to have after this year. They were not going to re-sign Rich Hill, they were not going to re-sign Josh Reddick, and they turned it into three players, including Frankie Montas, who's one of the high-end pitching prospects in baseball. And you look at their farm system now in the new MLB pipeline rankings, they've got three of the top 100 players, and including Franklin Barrietto, a shortstop who's ready to go this year. Matt Chapman, a third baseman who's ready to go this year. Ryan Healy, a third baseman who's been up now and has played well. And there is the one thing Billy Beane has always tried to do is have an inventory of pitching. They have an inventory of pitching even with everything that's gone bad. Kendall Graveman has been a terrific bright spot. You know, it's Jesse Hahn's been a bright spot. The new kid, Dylan Overton, has been a bright spot. So when you have pitching, you know, you have a place to build in the offseason. With Billy, it's hard to predict. I mean, he treats it like it's a chessboard moving the pieces around. So this we know. They're going to have pitching next spring, and that gives you hope. And the other thing we know is that Billy's going to make a ton of moves this year to go for this guy, that guy, and fill in around the pieces. Remember, he was right about Marcus Semien. Nobody seemed to like him. He looks like a player now. Ron Washington's helped make him a decent defensive player. Third baseman Healy can play. So that's where you start. You got pitching, you got a few pieces, and you got to build from there.
Well, haven't we been hearing that for a while, though? I mean, let's say when they were good a few years ago, let's talk about what made them good. Because nothing has changed in the organization. They're not in a new stadium. They don't have a decent payroll. They constantly have to be reinventing themselves. So what was it from a few years ago?
When they won the AL West on the last day of the 2012 season, Billy Beane came in the clubhouse like an hour after the celebration had started. The riders had gone, the wives had been ushered in. It was kind of a family moment. And the players took Billy and threw him down on the floor and harassed the hell out of him. And what Billy said that day was, he was almost emotional, you know, because they hadn't made it for a while. And he said, you know, what people don't know is how hard it is to do it when you don't have money to spend. And you're trying to spend a nickel and get a dollar. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You're going to have hits and you're going to have misses. And he was really, you know, it was like he got so much credit for the book Moneyball and for the 2001 team and all that. They're smarter than everybody else. Well, what happens when the Boston Red Sox combine brains and money? What happens when the Chicago Cubs hire the best general manager in baseball and spend a lot of money too? It's still hard for Oakland to compete, and Oakland has to still find the next great thing. Billy, you know, at the beginning, Moneyball's all about, it's the biography of an idea. It's about, okay, on-base average is not appreciated. And then Billy had to go into what's undervalued now, defense. He went out and got these guys, Billy Burns and Sogard, and these guys that busted their butts and played defense. That's the challenge for Oakland, is to keep going. I think the future's bright. 2 years ago when Billy tore down again, he thought that by the time they were ready to go again, they'd be in a new ballpark. Clearly that's not going to happen now. But I do think, you know, I think that's a bright spot. Baseball is committed now to Oakland. I think everybody agrees it has to happen in Oakland. You know, there's so much wealth in San Francisco and the South Bay that wealth has to spill over in Oakland. And what Commissioner Manfred said 2 weeks ago is that if we leave Oakland, we're going to regret it. We're going to look back and say, all these other markets, and Rob didn't mention other towns. He didn't mention Las Vegas or San Antonio or Charlotte or Portland. But all these other towns are not going to have the potential Oakland has. So that's the situation the A's are in.